Ghoulish greetings, everyone. The music is courtesy of Fading Point, Destined to Fail, Stick the Landing, and Mercedes Luck Benedict. And I, of course, am your host, Tessa Morrow. Thanks for stopping by and making Paranormal Prowlers Podcast part of your morning, day, night, graveyard shift, whenever you listen and wherever you are listening from the Atlantic to the Pacific, from the East Coast to the West Coast to the Sunshine Coast, from hot desert to cold mountaintops, and everything in between, it is greatly appreciated.
This week's city shout-out goes to
Ilford, England, Bowie, Maryland, Lompoc, California, Frankfurt, Germany, Kurukshetra, India, and Kane, Pennsylvania. Welcome to part two of Supposed Killer Songs. This is Operation Scapegoat, Pearl Jam. Now, sadly, like the list of dead rockers, the list of music scapegoats is ever so long. So, the series will be as well. Why can't people just take responsibility for their actions? You do something, you mess up, you own up to it, and you face the consequences, right? Sometimes that something that someone does is huge, traumatizing, deadly, catastrophic. The bigger the mess up, the bigger and more serious the consequences, obviously. It's easy to preach and lecture and say, hey, just don't do stupid shit that can land you dead, hated by the community or nation, or behind bars for the rest of your natural life. But it's not that easy. Somehow, some way, there are certain people that become completely unhinged. And because of that, sometimes people, well, they pay the ultimate price, their life. Operation Scapegoat Pearl Jam begins right now. The supposed culprit is Jeremy. It's a meaningful song, and it was written from the heart, based on a heartbreaking event that took place in a classroom. The result? Well, a young man kills himself in front of his classmates and teacher. More on that in just a very short while. Again, the song, The Supposed Killer, Pearl Jam's Jeremy. Lyrics include, at home drawn pictures of mountaintops with him on top, lemon yellow sun, arms raised in a V, and the dead lay in pools of maroon below. Another part of the song, the second verse, sings this. Clearly I remember picking on the boy. Seemed a harmless little fuck. Oh, but we unleashed a lion. And then the chorus is, Jeremy spoke in class today. The true meaning of Jeremy. Well, there are two haunting events that took place that inspired the song Jeremy. And I'm going to talk about both of them right now.
Forget the lies,
Tuesday, January 8th, 1991. It starts off as a normal day for staff and students at Richardson High School in the Texas town of Richardson. 30 students walk into their second period English class, expecting it to be a normal, perhaps boring for some, class. 30 students walked in. Only 29 would step foot out. 15-year-old sophomore Jeremy Wade Dell enters the classroom, and he is not alone. On him is a .357 Magnum revolver. Now, in most cases, this would lead to a horrific mass school shooting, but not in this particular case. Jeremy was not out to seek vengeance or revenge or put fear and terror in people's hearts and souls. No, he came with the sole purpose to take his own life. Yes, I'm sure this too brought fear and terror and utter heartbreak in those 29 students and teachers' hearts and minds and souls. But they were safe. No one else but Jeremy would die in that classroom on that fateful January day in 1991. The following year, Eddie Vedder, the frontman of Pearl Jam, came upon an article that discussed Jeremy's suicide, and Eddie wasted no time. This young man's suicide stuck with him, and it was a huge inspiration for the song Jeremy. And it's a good song. If you haven't heard it, you really should give it a listen for sure. But there was another incident that took place, and this too was inspiration for the song Jeremy. And again, I'm going to talk about that in a little while, but right now, I want to focus on 15-year-old Jeremy Wade Dell. And I did see a video about his mom and saying that his suicide is not the thing that defines him. And I understand that. I get that. There are so many people that I know who took their own lives and they had their likes and dislikes. And yeah, their ending was shitty, but they had jokes and inside jokes and quirks and lovable things about them. And same with 9/11. You know, these people, they died this horrible way, but that's not what defines them, right? And so, yeah, Jeremy, I agree with his mom. His suicide does not define who he was as a human being. That's for sure. One of my classmates in New Mexico was 15 years old, I think he was 14, when he took his own life, and it rocked the community. He was such a sweet and kind soul, and it shook the small mountain town to the very core. It still saddens me decades later just to think of it, and I'm sure that's the same thing with Jeremy. So in an interview in 2009, Eddie Vedder brought up a good point, basically saying that when you commit suicide, you may end up in the papers taking up a small portion consisting of, a few sentences, and how he, quote, felt the need to take that small article and make something of it, to give that action, to give it reaction, to give it more importance, unquote. He goes into more detail about the song itself, saying this: it came from a small paragraph in a paper, which means you kill yourself, you make a big old sacrifice and try to get your revenge, that all you're gonna end up with is a paragraph in a newspaper. 63 degrees and cloudy in a suburban neighborhood. That's the beginning of the video. And that's the same thing is that in the end, it does nothing. Nothing changes. The world goes on and you're gone. The best revenge is to live on and prove yourself. Be stronger than those people. And then you can come back, unquote. And I swear, I got chills when I was just reading that because it's so true. I mean, during my bully days in New Mexico, same school where the 14-year-old kid killed himself, I'm sure those bullies wanted me to take my own life. And, you know, at times I was like, I wish I weren't here, but I win, bullies. You're out. And so it's true. It's like the best revenge is to continue living, be you, and boom. Really good advice for those struggling with depression and suicidal thoughts. And there are always other options. So that day, Jeremy, he's late to his English class. His teacher sends him to the principal's office to get a tardy slip. He's excused from class to do that task, right? He walks into the hallway, and he's walking, but he does not head to the principal's office, let me tell you that. He goes to his locker, where he retrieves a revolver. He comes back into the classroom, walks to the front, he's front and center of everybody. He looks over at his teacher and says, "Miss, I got what I really went for." He then proceeds to put that barrel of his revolver into his mouth, and he pulls the trigger. I mean, truly fucking heartbreaking that this 15-year-old boy, he is just a child, felt that this was the only solution. And how terrifying for the teacher and his classmates to witness the suicide of a student that was described by his peers as shy. He was a very quiet individual who seemed to always be on the sadder side. That's what they observed anyways. A friend and classmate of Jeremy's was shocked when he took his own life, saying this: "He and I would pass notes back and forth, and he would talk about life and stuff. He signed all of his notes right back, but on Monday, he wrote, 'Later days.' I didn't know what to make of it, but I never thought this would happen." Guess what, you guys? Jeremy killed himself the following morning after he wrote her that note saying, "Later days."
Wait, give me just 1 second. Give me like 2 minutes. Something's coming down upon my head. Too late. I keep thinking something about all of the things that I must do while I'm still awake.
The Dallas Morning News writes this article regarding Jeremy, a Richardson High School sophomore described as a loner who had been in counseling, fatally shot himself Tuesday in front of a classroom of about 30 students. Jeremy Wade Dell, 16. FYI, this is the only article that I saw that stated him as 16. Everywhere else it said 15, so I'm sticking with 15. Who had transferred from a Dallas school, died instantly after firing a .357 caliber magnum into his mouth about 9:45 a.m., police said. Because he had missed class, the teacher in his second period English class told Jeremy to get an admittance slip from the school office. Instead, he returned with the gun, police said. He walked directly to the front of the classroom. "Miss, I got what I really went for," he said, then placed the barrel in his mouth and fired, according to Sergeant Ray Pennington, a police spokesman. The shooting occurred before the students or teacher Faye Barnett could react, said school district spokeswoman Susan Dacus Wilson. It stunned the students and faculty members throughout the school at 1250 W Beltline Road. Brian Jackson, 16, said he was working the combination on his locker just outside Jeremy's English class when he heard a loud bang. Quote,
"Like someone had just slammed a book on a desk. I thought they were doing a play or something,"
he said.
"But then I heard a girl scream, and a blonde girl came running out of the classroom, and she was crying."
Frightened but curious, Brian looked into the classroom and saw Jeremy lying on the floor bleeding.
"The teacher was standing against the wall crying and shaking,"
Brian said.
"Some people were standing around her holding her as if to keep her from falling."
Another student, Howard Pear Fellman, an 11th grader, was in government class when he heard the shot.
"At first, students joked about the noise, thinking that someone was playing around,"
he said.
"But then we heard a girl running down the hall screaming. It was a scream from the heart."
Sergeant Pennington said Jeremy apparently had given some thought to his actions because he left a suicide note with a classmate. Investigators would not disclose its contents. Principal Jerry Bishop said Jeremy's class attendance had been sporadic. Mr. Bishop said he had met with the boy and his father to discuss the problem. Police said that Jeremy had been in counseling with his father, but they did not know the specifics, Sergeant Pennington said. Police did not know where the youth got the gun and had no clue why he would kill himself in a crowded classroom. The classmates who witnessed the shooting were immediately ushered to a scheduled room for counseling. About 30 members of the school district's volunteer crisis team arrived to counsel the students. Classes continued throughout the day. Some students were allowed to leave early, but counselors encouraged them to stay at school and discuss their feelings. Lisa Moore, 16, said she knew Jeremy from the in-school suspension program. He and I would pass notes back and forth, and he would talk about life and stuff. She said Jeremy wanted to discuss the boy she was dating and also mentioned that he was having trouble with one of his teachers. He signed all of his notes right back, but on Monday he wrote later days. I didn't know what to make of it, she said, but I never thought this would happen. However, Sean Forrester, 17, remembered Jeremy as friendly with no outward signs of turmoil.
He never looked like he had anything wrong with him. I mean, he always made a joke over everything,
Sean said. Jeremy was the son of Joseph Ardell of Richardson, with whom he lived, and Wanda Crane. The couple divorced in 1979, according to Dallas County Court records. Mr. Dell could not be reached for comment. Miss Crane, through a spokesman, declined to comment. Tuesday's shooting was the first known teen suicide in a Richardson school. It was the first by a Richardson student since 1988, when student suicides prompted the creation of the Crisis Intervention Program in May that year. Three Richardson students committed suicide during the first half of 1988. They included a sixth grader and two sophomores at J.J. Pierce High School. One of the sophomores hanged himself from a tree behind Mohawk Elementary School during a weekend. In 1985, a 17-year-old Arlington student shot himself in front of four fellow students in the drama classroom at Arlington High School. Earlier, an outbreak of teen suicides in Plano, where eight youths killed themselves in 1983 and 1984, helped focus national attention on the plight of suicidal teenagers. Students and counselors agreed that the shock of Jeremy's public demise would have a lingering effect on the Richardson students, particularly the witnesses. They are going to go through a ton of sadness, anxiety, and fear, said Cheryl Pender, a counselor with Willow Park Hospital in Plano and former director of the Suicide and Crisis Center in Dallas, unquote. I mean, first of all, that's so heartbreaking. Eight suicides of teenagers in just the 2-year span. I mean, oh my God. And then that child hanging behind Mohawk Elementary School. I mean, it's just so incredibly heartbreaking. I've had people in my life commit suicide, family and friends, but never have bore witness to anything like that before personally. And I just, my heart goes out to all the people who actually have. Can't even imagine. So the other event that inspired the song Jeremy took place years before Jeremy killed himself. And it occurred when Eddie Vedder himself was a young student at school, and a student who he had issues with went into the oceanography classroom and he begins shooting. In an interview, this is what Vedder shared about that particularly scary incident. Quote, I actually knew somebody in junior high school in San Diego, California, that did the same thing, just about. Didn't take his life, but ended up shooting up an oceanography classroom. I remember being in the halls and hearing it, and I had actually had altercations with this kid in the past. I was kind of a rebellious fifth grader, and I think we got in fights and stuff. So it's a bit about this kid named Jeremy, and it's also a little bit about a kid named Brian that I knew. And I don't know, the song? I think it says a lot. I think it goes somewhere. And a lot of people interpret different ways, and it's just been recently that I've been talking about the true meaning behind it, and I hope no one's offended, and believe me, I think of Jeremy when I sing it. Spirits trapped inside. The music video for Jeremy, the unedited version, is graphic. I mean, it basically portrays what happened. This kid walking in front of the class and putting a gun in his mouth. And then you just see blood all over these startled students. and was majorly changed and censored, where if basically you were unfamiliar with Jeremy and his tragic ending, you would think this was a school shooting and not a suicide. Pearl Jam got shit on pretty bad when it came to Jeremy and the music video. Of course, MTV and whoever else shared it felt the need to change stuff because the truth, well, it just hurt too bad. The backlash was rough. And Pearl Jam actually would not release another music video for several years. And I can't blame them. I would be turned off from it as well if that happened to me. FarOutMagazine.co.uk talks more about the music video. Quote, speaking with SongFacts, director Mark Pellington reflected on the video's creation and issues. I got sent the track and actually passed on it in the beginning. It didn't grab me immediately, and then my producer was like, listen to it a little bit more. And I did. And I talked to Eddie, and he explained to me the story of the kid in Dallas, which is a true story, and I just dove in and put myself into it. Pellington continued, MTV made us edit out the gun going in the mouth. That created the great confusion, which made it appear like he brought the gun and shot his classmates, which was a huge misinterpretation, and years later connected Jeremy to school shootings, which was not it at all. Yet people like to make the connection. I've never seen a video that still gets written about so much. Maybe it was the underbelly of disenfranchised youth, the timelessness of that. If you think about it, from James Dean and Montgomery Clift and those kind of icons, it predated the whole shooter mentality of angry young white kids. So in that time, a kid taking a gun into a classroom was way ahead of its time, pre-Columbine. And when there is a school shooting, it often gets mentioned. The band wouldn't release a music video for 6 years, claiming that videos were taking the impetus away from the music. However, Jeremy did win a host of awards in 1993 at the MTV Video Music Awards, picking up the gongs for Video of the Year, Best Group Video, Best Metal Hard Rock Video, and Best Director. When collecting the award for Video of the Year, Eddie Vedder reflected on the song, saying, if it weren't for music, I think I would have shot myself in the front of the classroom. It really is what kept me alive. And so this is kind of full circle. So to the power of music, thanks. Friday, February 2nd, 1996. The community of Moses Lake, Washington would be plagued with grief and utter heartbreak when an unstable 14-year-old student named Barry Del Lucaitis walks into Frontier Middle School armed with a mind full of anger, hatred running through his veins, and a Winchester rifle, a .22 caliber, and a .25 semi-automatic pistol. All firearms belonging to his father, unsure if they were locked up or if he had easy access or if he had to go out of his way to get these. Don't know that situation. But what we do know is that fifth period begins and Barry walks into his algebra class and he begins wildly shooting. He would end up killing two of his classmates and then proceed to kill his algebra teacher as well. He then held two teachers hostage. He felt this was his key to get out of the school safely. The police wouldn't shoot him or harm him when he had two hostages that could die, right? Well, one of the hostages was a man named John Lane. He was a coach and teacher, very beloved, and he would end up being a hero. And he would live to see another day in the process. He convinced the demented young student to let the other teacher slash hostage go and that he would stay behind with Barry. Well, Barry would hold Lane at gunpoint with his Winchester for some time, but at some point, Lane decides to grab the rifle and wrestle the 14-year-old killer to the ground. He also helped terrified students get to safety, and he kept Barry subdued until the authorities actually arrived, which I'm sure every second felt like an hour in a situation like that. Just saying. Barry's home life was anything but happy and loving. His parents fought often, and when it was revealed that his father was having an affair, his mother files for divorce, and Barry ends up staying with his mother. But even though Dad is the one who committed adultery, he may have been the safer option for their young son. His mom, Joanne, was sick in her own way. She begins to talk about how she feels the need that she needs to die, how she will commit suicide. Not only this, but she starts to talk to her young, impressionable 14-year-old son, saying that he too needs to commit suicide. She begins planning their deaths, telling him that they would take their lives on Valentine's Day, 12 days after the school shooting. And the young Barry pleads with his mother, saying that suicide is not the way to go, that they deserve to live. And I know this guy is a killer and he did some pretty horrible things, but I can't help but feel bad for him at that moment. He is pleading for his life and his mother's life to be spared. But his mom, she does not listen. Could he have told his dad or confide in a counselor or maybe go to the police, child services, anybody? Perhaps he did and was ignored, or maybe it didn't even cross his mind. So the victims, the two classmates, Manuel Vela Jr. and Arnold Fritz, both aged 14, and the algebra teacher, Leona Carus, who was shot in the chest, they did not deserve death. They all had their lives ahead of them. Barry would share that he had one victim in mind, who indeed was one of his victims, that being Manuel. He admits that he wanted Manuel dead, that everyone else, that was accidental. They did not need to die. Why Barry was hellbent on taking Manuel's life? I have no clue. The song Jeremy and the music video is thought to have an impression on this 14-year-old killer, giving him the motivation to commit the shootings. Again, in the censored video, it does look like a school shooting, not a suicide. Prosecutors, not defense attorneys, tried to say it was the song Jeremy and Stephen King's book Rage, and movies like Natural Born Killers as scapegoats for the three deaths. So who's to blame? Pearl Jam? No. Eddie Vedder for writing the song? No. Stephen King? No. Hollywood? No. His dad having an affair? No. Not right what he did, obviously, but still a big no. Was it his mom giving him an expiration date on his life, saying that he would die on Valentine's Day? I believe that's a partial yes. She may not have put the firearms in his hands, or maybe she did. She sure as hell was mentally unstable enough to do so. But the real culprit, the real killer, it was Barry Del Lucidus. So one September day in 1997, Barry is handed two counts of first-degree murder, one count of second-degree murder, and one count of first-degree attempted murder, as he did shoot and badly injure a girl in the same shooting. He was also charged with several counts of aggravated kidnapping. Barry was handed two life sentences and given an additional 205 years without the possibility of parole. Bye, bitch, you're never seeing the light of day again. And that's a good thing. I mean, I am so incredibly sick of these minors going out doing very adult, very bad, very deadly things where many innocent people die. And because of their age, they get a slap on the wrist. And that is not okay. Today, Barry calls Clallam Bay Corrections Center his home. Some of his roommates include serial killers George Russell, better known as the Charmer, who killed at least three women and then performed necrophilia on his victims' bodies, and John Dwight Kennedy, who raped and murdered at least three Seattle women. And at the time of his death, due to natural causes, something he robbed his victims of doing, he was serving three life sentences. Suicide was discussed during this episode. If someone you know or yourself are having suicidal thoughts, tendencies, or dealing with depression, please know that you are not alone. Your life matters, and there are other ways to cope. You are not only hurting yourself when you do something so permanent like suicide, but you are also hurting your loved ones. As someone who have lost people, both family and friends, to suicide, it's an unbearable feeling. The pain resides, and it doesn't just dissipate. Talk to someone. Don't be afraid to reach out. The suicide hotline is 1-800-273-8255. You are not alone. And again, I quote Eddie Vedder, wisely said, "It does nothing. Nothing changes. The world goes on and you're gone. The best revenge is to live on and prove yourself. Be stronger than those people. And then you can come back."
And that concludes another fantastic podcast. Legend has it, if you don't tune in, I'll be returning to haunt you. So make sure to tune in for the next episode.
Did you enjoy this week's episode? Listen to the others. They are all awesome. Haven't heard every single one yet? No need to cry about it, my friends. Just hit up any of those podcast platforms, such as Deezer, Pocket Cast, Podcast Republic, Downcast, CastBox, Spotify, basically wherever you may roam to hear your other spooky podcasts, you'll probably find Paranormal Prowlers Podcast lurking in the background. Thanks for stopping by, and
I will see you next week.